The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final furlong show here on HRRN as we dive headlong into this final furlong here with you, Mike Penna, Jude Feld on Trainer Talk Wednesday, and a great show on tap for you for the next hour. We welcome all of you tuning in, Sirius 93, XM 209, Internet Smartphone Channel 961, and we're going to kick things off with Trainer Graham Motion. He's going to be with us right until 6:30 Eastern Time. Kieran McLaughlin will be with us following that for the second half of the show. But Graham, nice enough to take some time to join us and visit with us here this afternoon. One of the nicest guys in the game and one hell of a trainer as well. Graham, thanks for being here.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, guys.
Graham, just for the record, 8 days, 21 hours, 58 minutes, and 43 seconds until the Breeders' Cup. How are you holding up?
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on us a little bit. The time flies by. It's exciting to be this close. It's something you think about, you know, from the beginning of the year this day. So it's amazing that we're only 8 days away.
And you're going back with your Derby winner. And this show, much more about talking about you and your background and how you got into racing, some of your other interests. But we'd be remiss if we didn't start by talking about Animal Kingdom for just a few minutes here. Going back with your Derby winner, going to the Breeders' Cup Mile, and his first start since February. Tell us how he's doing.
Yeah, he's doing great. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't be doing it if he wasn't doing great. He's had basically an uninterrupted program since the beginning of the summer when we started him back galloping. He's breezed every week when I've wanted him to breeze. Things have pretty much gone like clockwork. So now we just, he'll have an easy breeze on Friday at Keeneland before flying out to California on Saturday.
We often talk about horses preparing for grade one races don't have a straw in their path, and it sounds like that's the route he's been on, huh? No hiccups along the way.
No, I mean, in an unconventional manner, I guess that's a fair way of putting it. Normally you would have expected him to have a race or two this year, but we like to think that the allowance race in February was a prep for the Breeders' Cup.
I think it was a brilliant plan, actually. I was so excited when you decided to actually follow through. You talked about it a little bit off and on, and when the word came out that you were actually going to do it, I think it's brilliant. And a question I've always wanted to ask you is, how is it that you get these horses ready to run at a fever pitch off of a long layoff? And it seems to me like it doesn't matter the distance. I mean, you've proven it time and time again. You had a horse win the other day, a mile and a half off of a rest. You win a mile and 3/8 off of a rest. It doesn't matter. So a mile should be like nothing for you.
Well, I think, some people will be surprised that we chose the mile, but my feeling was that, the mile and a quarter on the dirt is kind of a grueling race. The mile and a half on the turf, I think you're always going to be a little concerned that he might come away from there a little sharp and not run the race that you want him to run. In the mile, I know there's going to be plenty of speed in there. I think he'll have a good trip. He should settle. It's an easier race, if you like, to bring a horse back in. Having said that, I think, a lot of the preparation is about the horse. You've got to have the goods to work with, and he's a special horse. We've been able to do a lot with him at Fairhill. We've trained him over on the steeplechase course, which has a pretty grueling, the last quarter of a mile of his workouts at Fairhill have been up a hill, basically, very much in a European style. So, I think that and my background coming up under Jonathan Shepherd, which he's the master of bringing horses back off a layoff like that. So I'd like to think that rubbed off on me to some degree.
And Graham, this is something that is really not without precedent. We saw Michael Dickinson do this with DeHaas, bringing him back off of a tremendously long layoff at Churchill Downs to win the Breeders' Cup Mile. Any similarities in terms of what you're doing to bring him back to what maybe Michael Dickinson did with DeHaas?
I guess it's comparable, but Michael's horse, had already won the Breeders' Cup mile, so he was already proven going that distance in the Breeders' Cup. And actually, his horse was coming off a two-year layoff, which I didn't realize that. I spoke to Michael the other day, and I said, I spoke to him more about why he felt that he needed a prep race. And he said, you know, his horse had been away for 2 years. He just felt like he had to get him back and kind of get his more about mentally getting his head in the game than anything. So, you know, we have the luxury, if you like, of not having quite that long a layoff to deal with. And I really didn't feel like this horse needed a prep race to get to the Breeders' Cup. I felt like he could possibly, you know, run such a big race in preparing for it that he might not run his race on Breeders' Cup day. So I just chose this route of going there fresh. And, you know, look, it's a tough challenge, but I'd like to think he's up to it.
And it's not something that just came to you over the course of the last couple of weeks or so. This is something you've had in your mind as a possible target ever since, what, May or June? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I kind of thought about it over the summer, just when I was trying to figure out in my mind, you know, the timing of when he'd be ready to run. And I mentioned to Barry one day, you know, I said, the timing of the Breeders' Cup would be great for this horse. And I really wouldn't want to run him in a prep race. And Barry is very good like that. He's very open to suggestions. He's very broad-minded. He's very optimistic, which is good, because I think as trainers, we tend to become a little pessimistic. So it's kind of good to have that boost sometimes. But this is something we thought about, you know, a long time ago. And it's amazing to me that we're now only 8 days away, quite honestly.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that, about being thoughtful about your horses? I think you're a guy that really spends a lot of time thinking about the animals and how to get them to particular spots. Why don't you talk about that process a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, we get a lot of horses from Europe. We get a lot of horses that have already been running that you've kind of got to figure out where they're at. So certainly I get to see it from different angles, if you like. You know, we also get plenty of two-year-olds in the spring. So we get quite a digression of different horses to prepare for races. So, you know, certainly a lot goes into it. I've always been a big believer that in order to get to the Breeders' Cup, you know, you kind of have to have a plan. I felt like with Better Talk Now and Shared Account that, you know, I pretty much had fresh horses going into the Breeders' Cup. And I've always been a believer that you can't go to the Breeders' Cup with a horse that's kind of, you know, been running since Gulfstream in January without a break, because I think the fresh horses tend to prevail at that point.
Kentucky Derby winning trainer Graham Motion joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show on HRRN. I know you like when I introduce you like that, Graham, and I throw the Kentucky Derby winner in the beginning.
Yeah, that doesn't get old, believe me.
Well, look, now that we've gone up to the present time with Animal Kingdom, let's go back to the beginning and talk about Graham Motion. Of course, you're, what, 48 years old, born in Cambridge, England, and born into a racing family. Walk us through your background and take us through how you got started in the world of thoroughbred racing.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in England, about 6 miles from Newmarket, which is kind of the horse capital of England, if you like, very much the Lexington, Kentucky, if you like, of England. My parents were very involved in racing. They had a horse farm in Herringswell, which is actually what I call my operation, Herringswell Stables. My dad was actually representative for Tattersall's, which is the English auction company, which is based in Newmarket. So I very much had horse racing in my roots. My mom actually looked after a Grand National winner, would you believe, and rode she was the last mare to win the Grand National, I believe, in the 1950s. So, you know, I had a lot of racing in my background. And to be honest, growing up, I always wanted to be a jockey, but it was fairly soon that I knew I was going to be too big to do that. I eventually, when I left school over here, my parents eventually moved to the States. And when I left school, I spent a year working on a horse farm in France. Which is where I guess I really got the bug for racing there. They had some two-year-olds in training on the farm, and that's when I really decided that training was for me. I came back and I spent some time with Jonathan Shepherd, probably, I think, 5 years I spent with Jonathan Shepherd. And I think Actually, my dad thought that one winter in Pennsylvania with Jonathan might put me off for life. I think that's what he was hoping anyway. I ended up being there for 5 years, and that was the best education I could have had. I mean, to me, that was my college, was working for Jonathan, my 5 years of college. I think Jonathan's, probably one of the greatest horsemen in the States. I think what he does is remarkable, especially with what you were talking about earlier with bringing horses off layoffs. And I just saw him do some amazing things there, whether it was with flat horses or with steeplechasers. So that was a great education for me. And then I spent 3 years with Bernie Bond, which was the other end of the spectrum, with two-year-olds at Pimlico, which was probably the best follow-up I could have had. So I was very fortunate to work for some really good people, and Bernie ended up retiring, and that's how I got started in the game with Bernie's owners, actually.
And, you mentioned, going to school and then getting into training from there and then going to the school of Jonathan Shepherd, so to speak, and getting your education on that front. I'm curious what kind of student you were, Graham. Were you one that would go and hit the books, or did you always want to be out there around the racetrack and doing something around the track?
Yeah, I was much more hands-on. I think that's always been my thing. I mean, I think most of us that get into this, the reason we get into it is because we like the animals. That's, to me, is the pleasure of it, is being around the horses. That's why I got into racing. I love being around the horses. And that was very much something that we did at Jonathan's. I mean, we worked long days. It was very unconventional there. We'd start at 6 in the morning, and some days we wouldn't get done until 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and we'd train all day, and we had some great horses there. We had Stormcat, we had Flatterer, who was the champion steeplechaser for 3 or 4 years. So I really saw a digression of all types of horses. And so got a lot of experience with that.
And with your mom and dad being in the game, you said that your dad was maybe hoping that time with Jonathan Shepherd would kind of set you on the straight and narrow and get you away from that, so to speak. Were they very supportive when you told them that you wanted to become a trainer and do this on your own?
Yeah, very much so. I think, basically, I think I've lived out what my mom would always like to have done. It was obviously a lot harder for a woman in those days to be a trainer. My mom was actually one of the first women on the backstretch at Belmont. She used to gallop steeplechasers when the steeplechasers were actually trained on the track. They've been extremely supportive, obviously, and really follow my career very closely and get a lot of pleasure out of it, obviously.
When you first started out, what was your initial success? I mean, what horse kind of put you on the map?
Yeah, when I first started training, Bernie had a really good horse called Gala Spinaway, who was, at the time, he was probably the top Maryland horse. And he was a horse that really put me on the map, because I think when people saw, I won a race called the Polynesian at Pimlico. I think that was the first graded stake I won with him. And I think when people see you winning with a horse like that, that gives them confidence to send you horses. Everybody needs a horse like that to get them going. So I feel like he was really the kind of horse that put me on the map. And ironically, he actually gets turned out every day. I still have him. the owners left him with us, and he gets turned out with Bellator now every day. And at Fair Hill, and they're probably the two most influential horses, up until probably Animal Kingdom, that really helped my career.
Is it safe to say that Jonathan Shepherd is probably the individual who had the most influence on your career, or is there somebody else that had a big influence as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly my parents and obviously Jonathan. Jonathan is probably what helps me to structure the way I train. I mean, it's no coincidence that I've ended up getting a reputation for training turf horses and particularly maybe even fillies to some degree. And I think that's something that that I spent a lot of time doing at Jonathan's. Working at Jonathan's was all about keeping the horse happy, getting the horse to relax. And that's why I think we probably do particularly well in turf races.
Talk about your family for just a few minutes, Graham. I know your wife, Anita, a beautiful lady, and not just your wife, but certainly very supportive, and your partner in everything that you do. Talk about what Anita and your family has meant to you and to your career.
Yeah, I mean, having Anita to help me with this, I mean, it's very grueling, I think, mentally and physically. I think training can be very grueling, and I think to have have the support, have somebody that you can come back and complain to at the end of the day, or throw ideas to at the end of the day. You know, she's always been extraordinarily supportive of me and never second-guessed things that I do. And I think I think when you do what we do, you kind of need that. It can be very, you know, I think it's very easy to second-guess yourself when you're training. Things go wrong all the time. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. I think any trainer will tell you that he learns new things every day. So, you know, certainly from a supportive point of view, it's been, you know, it's what's helped me make my career what it is. And besides that, you know, my wife really is such a huge part of running the business. You know, she's totally taken on the financial side of things and organizing our business. I actually have two different offices. My wife's in one office, and I have a secretary who kind of runs the horse side of things at the barn. So it takes a lot of people to run an operation of this size. I mean, I have tremendous respect for Todd and the way he does things, and Kieran. You know, those guys, they have huge operations, and they're just so well run. And I think it's a credit to them. And I think, you know, horse racing has changed so much. I think that they're more, you know, a lot of stables are run more like corporations these days than they are just, you know, family horse businesses, if you like.
Bigger challenge for you right now, getting Animal Kingdom ready for the Breeders' Cup Mile or raising your teenage daughter, Jane?
Oh, definitely raising the teenage daughter. But she's doing great. She's really enjoyed hanging out with you guys, and she did the handicapping show with you one day. I think last year was it before the Breeders' Cup, which has been tremendous. Probably the most interest she's ever shown in horse racing has been with you guys, actually. So,
well, she... She took over our booth at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, and she had a good time doing that. She's a great girl, and a tribute to you and your wife.
Well, I think we're very fortunate in what we do that our children can be involved. You know, I'm only a mile away from home, so I can be in and out of the house all day pretty much as I please. Whereas if I was working in an office in Wilmington or in New York City, you know, I'd be gone at 8 o'clock in the morning and home at 5 o'clock at night. So I think, you know, in some respects, what we do we're very fortunate that the family's able to be so involved, to be honest.
Talk about the logistics a little bit of your operation. You're training away from the racetrack, yet you run at so many different locations. I think the listeners would be interested to know how that all works.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges of training at Fairhill is having enough people, you know, that you can be sending, you know, horses off to five or six different racetracks at any given weekend. It takes a lot of organization to do that, and I guess that's one of the drawbacks of training in a training center is that you're always putting horses on the van to go to the races. So there's no doubt it takes a lot of organization. It's more kind of European, really, if you like, where, you know, horses are going every day to a different racetrack. But I think the flip side of that, it's well worth it. I think the advantages of training at Fairhill are vast.
Graham Motion joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the final furlong show on HRRN. Graham, what is life like for Graham Motion outside of horse racing? I know you probably don't get a lot of free time, but in your free time, what is life like? What do you like to do?
You know, I don't really have any hobbies, to be honest, which sounds very boring, but I think, you know, training horses is what I really enjoy doing. I mean, it's sometimes hard to think of it that it's really a job, to be honest, because it's a pleasure, you know, for me to be able to get up every morning and go to the barn. I think a lot of people would love to be doing that. So I think I'm very fortunate in that respect, but it is extremely time consuming. You know, it's early in the morning till late at night with the phone and what have you. And, you know, especially in the summer when you're running at different racetracks. You know, we were running at Presque Isle, so often the feature wouldn't go off till 8:30 at night. So you pretty much your day from dawn till dusk is occupied with training horses. But that's it's what I enjoy doing, and I'm very lucky to be able to do it at the level I'm playing the game at.
It's been my experience that most trainers of your caliber are kind of that way. I mean, the late, great Charlie Whittingham, people used to ask him all the time, when are you going to retire? He says, retire, I go to the races every day and I eat steak every night. What would I do if I was retired?
Well, so, I think that's true. And I think, you know, we all get in the game because we enjoy it. And if everybody could be so lucky to find something they enjoy doing like we do, we're very fortunate, really.
Do you have any favorite sports teams or anything that you follow throughout the year? You have to have a little time to at least follow somebody, right?
Yeah, I've really gone into the fantasy football. I enjoy it a lot. One of my owners, actually the owner of Bellator now, Brent Johnson, has a fantasy football league, and I've really enjoyed playing that the last 3 or 4 years. And I got to be buddies a little bit with Andy Reid over when Animal Kingdom ran in the Derby, and I've kept in touch with him. So I've become quite a fan of the Eagles. I follow them quite closely. I went to a practice last year and really enjoyed participating in that. So I guess that's probably the team that I follow the closest at the moment.
Who's your quarterback on your fantasy team?
I have Aaron Rodgers, so I'm pretty lucky. I had the number one draft pick, so that's where I started off.
That's good. Are you doing any good?
I am. I'm actually leading my league, which I think everybody is very shocked about.
Multi-talented.
He does it all.
Yeah, that's right.
Grant, let's go back for just a moment to that first Saturday in May with Animal Kingdom and that Derby victory. What was the first phone call or text message that you received? Do you remember the very first one?
No way. I mean, my phone literally exploded. I don't think I got to it until after 9 or 9:30, and everybody was saying, why didn't you call? Why didn't you get a hold of us? And I think, you know, the time from 6:30 till 9:30 was just a blur. It went by very quickly. It was an extraordinary experience, something you can never prepare yourself for.
When you look back on that day now, what is the first thing that comes to mind or some of the most fond memories that you have other than the fact that he crossed the finish line first in the Kentucky Derby?
I mean, I think walking out of the blocks after he crossed the wire was just surreal. I remember a couple kind of walking towards me saying, you know, you just won the Kentucky Derby. I have no idea who they were. and I started telling them a story about how I, you know, thought this might happen one day, and I think they must have thought I was crazy that I was having this conversation with them right after I just won the Kentucky Derby. But it was very surreal. I eventually ran into Dale Romans, who he actually led me down to the winner's circle because I had no idea how to get down to the winner's circle when you're in that kind of crowd and you're in that kind of state of mind. I literally ended up hanging on to the back of his sports coat, and he led me down to the winner's circle, which was pretty neat.
That's really cool. Well, it is such a tremendous feat, and what experiences have you had since then that, you know, trainers always say, well, people always ask you, have you won the Derby, and you have to tell them no. What experiences have you had since then where people are like amazed or you know, you little celebrity moments you may have had?
Yeah, I can't say I can think of any particular incidences, but I think people are always somewhat in awe when they ask you, you know, if you've won the Derby or if they meet you and you are a trainer who won the Kentucky Derby. It just has a tremendous amount of respect about it. It's one of those sporting feats that people, you know, everybody knows about the Kentucky Derby, and I think when people hear you won the Kentucky Derby, that jaw usually drops.
Trainer Graham Motion, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Graham, you ready? A couple minutes left before we have to let you go. Favorite food?
Probably steak.
Favorite ice cream flavor?
Vanilla. That sounds so boring.
That's all right. I don't want to ask you what your favorite curse word is, but I know trainers all have one.
Favorite movie of all time?
I like movies that really move me and shake me. Probably a movie like Schindler's List, something like that. I love a true story. I love kind of a depressing movie.
Outside of Animal Kingdom, favorite horse of all time?
I loved his now. I think he was the coolest horse.
Favorite racetrack?
Probably Keeneland.
He's trainer Graham Motion. He's been with us here as our special guest for the first half hour. Graham, we really appreciate you being here with us, taking some time, and we want to wish you all the best with Animal Kingdom and his comeback coming up here in November, in November 2nd and 3rd. We'll be there, of course, and looking forward to seeing you out there. Looking forward to seeing you here in Keeneland Friday. I'm sure you'll be here for his workout, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to come in there tomorrow night, so I'm looking forward to it, and I look forward to seeing you guys out there.
Graham Motion, great stuff. Thanks for being here, my friend. Say hello to everybody for us.
Okay, thanks for doing what you do.
Good stuff. Graham Motion, the 48-year-old native of Cambridge, England. Fun stuff, huh?
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Always willing to give back to racing, and you can't say that about everybody.
He's always been extremely accommodating to us, to any media organization. He's always made himself readily available, and really fun stuff. A podcast of this show will be available for you tomorrow on our Horse Racing Radio Network website. Stay tuned. Kieran McLaughlin coming up here to join us in the second half of the show. We'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. But Jude, looking toward Animal Kingdom and his return, this is something that, as you heard Graham say, has been pre-planned. It's not something that just came to him on a whim over the last 3 or 4 weeks, said, oh, let's run in the Breeders' Cup Mile. He's doing very good. He was thinking about this back in May.
Yeah, well, I knew he was thinking about it. I'd heard that. I can't remember how, but, and maybe Sean Clancy and I had a conversation about it. I don't know. But everybody was talking about Frankel, you know. Oh, is Frankel coming for the Breeders' Cup and stuff? And I'm just thinking, man, wouldn't it be cool if Animal Kingdom came back and you had Frankel and Animal Kingdom and Wise Dan, you know? I mean, and then, you know, when I knew Frankel wasn't coming, I just kept thinking about Animal Kingdom. And then when it really came out, like, I don't know, about a month ago or maybe 6 weeks ago or something, that they really were going to do it, I thought, wow, this is going to be a great race. I mean, that's the kind of matchup you want, a horse like Animal Kingdom and Wise Dan, because you know Animal Kingdom is going to be as good as he can be on the day, and Wise Dan is going to be as good as he can be on the day. And, you know, pray for the horses behind him.
Should be fun to watch.
I wonder who's going to be third.
You'll hear it all with us on HRRN. Can't wait for that showdown. Animal Kingdom supposedly in beast mode. We'll step away. We're back with Kieran McLaughlin coming up. Second half of Trainer Talk right after this.
This is HRRN, your home for the 2012 Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, full card, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race from every simulcast every day.
Hey, racing fans, don't miss your chance to check out Racing 101 from America's Best Racing. Racing 101 is a national tour visiting the country's leading racetracks to help introduce new fans to the sport and help enhance your experience at the track. Now you have the chance to learn fundamentals of the sport from the pros with one-on-one training and group seminars. Learn how to read the program, strategies for making wagers, what to look for in the paddock, how to manage your budgets, what to say at the betting window, and how to use the betting machines. And you'll have the chance to meet the stars of the sport up close with live interviews, autograph sessions, and photo opportunities. If you can't be there in person, log on to America's Best Racing at followhorseracing.com. That's followhorseracing.com.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
Thousands of thoroughbred racing fans from over 50 countries read RacehorseReport.com on a regular basis. RacehorseReport.com offers great stories about racing's top players, both human and equine, Bob Kiekeffer's weekend stakes preview and his Monday racing roundup, weekly spot play selections, and successful betting strategies for racing's biggest days. From a neophyte fan to a hardened horse player, everybody can learn a little something at RacehorseReport.com. And for the best and up-to-the-minute racing information, follow Racehorse Report on Facebook and Twitter. Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
And back with the second half of our Final Furlong show here on Trainer Talk Wednesday, a fun visit with Graham Motion in the first half of the show. Now turning our attention to Lexington, Kentucky native Kieran McLaughlin, who is nice enough to spend a little bit of time with us here this afternoon. We'll get to know Kieran, and he's going to be a very busy man over the course of the next, 8 days, 9 days or so as he gets ready for the Breeders' Cup World Championship. So really appreciate him taking a few minutes. Kieran, thanks for being here as always.
Thanks for having me.
Well, look, I mentioned we're going to start from the beginning here. We'll talk about the Breeders' Cup horses eventually, but want to get to know Kieran McLaughlin here a little bit. Take us through from the beginning. I mentioned a native of Lexington, Kentucky. You were born in the horse capital of the world, raised here. Walk us through and tell us about your upbringing and how you became fond and got hooked on horse racing.
Okay, great. I was born and raised in Lexington. I went to Clay's Mill. Went to actually Mary Queen for the first 3 years, and then I went to Clay's Mill, Jesse Clark, and Lafayette. And I went to University of Kentucky for 1 year. I was one and done long before Calipari made it popular and the thing to do. But my best friend was Greg Birchall, and when we were like 9 years old, 10 years old, he lived at Stonewall, and I lived by Clay's Mill and Mary Queen there in Southland Park. But he ended up going to Takes Creek. But as a very young guy at 9, 10 years old, his dad actually owned horses. And the Donald Hughes trained for him out at the training center in Paris Pike. And we would go out there on the weekends and just be around. And I just fell in love with it. And I remember watching the Kingland sales and million-dollar horses. I couldn't believe horses could sell for $1 million when I was a youngster. And Secretariat obviously won by 31 lengths when I was 12 years old, 13 years old. So that was very important in my life because I was basically hooked on horses at a young age. And my father was an IBMer, and my mother raised seven of us kids and then went back to school, and she was a radiologist at Lexington Community College and then UK. But so they didn't have anything to do with horse racing, but my best buddy, Greg Birchall, was the one that got me involved. And I worked hard and made some great decisions and got lucky and married my wife, Letty, at a young age, and her brother is Mark Hennig and father is John Hennig, and they're in the business, so she understands the business very well. And then I got a big break in 1985 and went to work for Wayne Lucas for 7 years, a year and a half with Chris Antley as a jocks agent, and then I went to Dubai in 1993, and luckily I'm still working for the Maktoums, but I spent 10 years in Dubai.
All right, there's Kieran McLaughlin on Trainer Talk.
Yeah.
took us right through the whole progression. I love it, Kieran. Now, think back to your first job on the track. You mentioned your buddy kind of getting you into the game. What was the first job that you had on the racetrack?
I was in Hot Springs, and And I was, after I went to the 1 year of college, I went back and decided I wanted to pursue horse racing full time. And I remember going to work for a man named Hoy Mooneyham at Hot Springs. And I told him, I have money. I just want to learn from the bottom up. And I had money, by meaning I had $1,500 or $2,000 in a checking account. And I thought I had money. But I said, pay me what you think I'm worth. And I just want to learn from the bottom. So I walked horses every day and groomed horses and was there basically all day with, he had four horses. So I took care of the four horses and I got paid $85 at the end of the week. And I said, damn, I thought I was worth a little more than that. But I went on and went from there to another trainer. And like I said, I worked for Greg Birchall's father pretty much, you know, the first couple of years, and as a teenager in the summers and on the weekends. So he was a big help, Jim Birchall in Hot Springs.
Well, and you mentioned Secretariat and watching him win the Belmont Stakes. What was the first big horse, really good horse, that you had the chance to be around personally and work with?
That's a good question. I would say with Wayne Lucas, Lady Secret, I was around her and Life's Magic. I came to Kingland. I remember her finishing second to Don't Stop the Music at Kingland. And then she went on to win the Breeders' Cup at Aqueduct that year, beating Lady Secret. And though, you know, I didn't obviously do much at that time with them. I was still young, and Jeff and Wayne did all the training, but I did travel with them some, and I was an assistant trainer, so I was around those two. And then Dinah Former and Open Mind, I had most of their career for Wayne Lucas, and they were two very important horses.
Wayne Lucas, of course, the Hall of Famer, known for being very regimented, very organized in his training, obviously won countless races, countless big races. Karen, what was it like working with Wayne?
Well, he was an early bird and a hard worker, and he was a great teacher, great horseman, and he never didn't answer a question if you had it. He didn't just say, shut up and do it because I said do it. He always gave an explanation for what he wanted and why he wanted it. But you didn't want to be late. And I remember having three alarm clocks because I didn't want to dare be late working for him. I was late one morning when my electricity went off. I was late about 20 minutes. And after that, I got three alarm clocks and made sure I was never late again. But he asked me to meet him at the donut shop in Santa Anita at 4 a.m. So I got all excited and got there at 3:45, and he was already there. And he was ready to leave, you know, by 4 o'clock. And I wondered, what the hell do you do at 4 o'clock? It's pitch black. and he did the set list the morning of, on the day, because he was such a perfectionist. He didn't want to have to white out if he had a horse down to work from the day before and it rained and he had to jog him instead of work him. And he just didn't like to change. He liked to get there at 4 in the morning and do the set list and check the track and check the horses. So, you know, it was he would leave then at 10 or 11 in the morning. But he was a very hard worker and a great teacher. I think that that's the most important thing, is he was an ex-high school teacher and coach, and he did a great job teaching and coaching Todd Pletcher, Mark Hennick, Dallas Stewart, myself, amongst others.
Yeah, I it's funny that you bring that up, because I remember those mornings at the donut shop now. I remember people talking about him, and I remember actually seeing him a few times at the donut shop in Del Mar, because I was kind of an early riser too, insomniac. I didn't sleep for like 20 years, but you know, I remember that now, and he was a guy, you know, he'd have that little desk lamp on his desk, and he'd be sitting there poring over the charts and all that, and he very organized guy, and I used to love, and something I copied from him when I trained was his dry erase board with all the horses' names on it. You know, he kept track of every horse everywhere, and that's got to be helpful to you now when you have such a far-flung operation. Do you have a similar setup?
Yes, we do. The difference now is for like Todd and myself is the computer, and we're able to have everything on the computer and know what's going on. And we both use T-Lore from Tracy Atfield, and many other trainers do. And it's so helpful to know everything about every horse. And we do our billing that way, teeth dates, shoeing dates, race results. And, you know, everything is there. So, you know, when I'm lucky because I have Kate Masterson as my office manager, like full-time secretaries. She moves the horses when they move. She does a lot. We do weekly reports, and we do a lot more than Wayne did back in his day, but things are different now with the technology and instant, you know, emails and text messages. So I have helped to do that daily.
Trainer Kieran McLaughlin, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Final Furlong Show. Kieran, first of all, what time do you get to the barn now that you're the boss?
Well, our first set goes at Belmont Park in the morning at 6, and I'll get there about 5:30. Luckily, I have great help, and Art Magnuson's been with me 20 years, so he's my assistant here. In Florida, the first set goes at 6:30, so I'll get there again like at 6 o'clock, 30 minutes before. My brother Neil's there with his wife, Trish. So I have great help. I don't have to be there so early, but I do like to get up early and go to the barn. Like in the morning, I might go to Saratoga. I might wake up at 4 o'clock and just drive up there. It's 3.5 hours. And no traffic early in the morning. So I've been going back and forth to Saratoga because our four Breeders' Cup horses are at Green Tree, and I'm on Long Island, so I'm 3.5 hours away. But I do get up and go every day. I love what I do.
Go back to Wayne for just a minute. You mentioned him being a great teacher. What are the one or two things that you still incorporate into your operation that came from the D. Wayne Lucas School?
I think the main thing is pointing for a race, and I give a lot of credit to his son Jeff. Wayne sometimes is not as good about pointing for a race like Jeff was, or not so, you know, insistent on we're going to point for October 28th, and that's the way it is. But the organization part of it is we have the set list made every day, and the riders know what they're going to get on. The grooms know what time they're going to go. The hot walkers know who they're going to walk. So organization is very important. The feed program is great with Wayne. You know, he always fed great. His horses always look good. And I find it interesting that over the years, many, many people thought that he must have had them all on anabolic steroids because they were big and strong and looked great. But he never used anabolic steroids, which was a big help for me when I went to Dubai, because anabolic steroids were not allowed there. And when I came back from Dubai in America, I didn't worry about using them. Then I did start using them, you know, mildly, and then I had to switch again because they're not legal again. But it was, you know, he was just very organized and a great horseman, and taught you a lot about everything, every aspect of the game, you know, working them once a week, trying to go 48, 101, not going too fast or too slow. And, you know, I wish I could have spent more time with him at the yearling sales, but I knew what he was looking for because I ended up training them for him. But I would have liked to have spent more time at sales, but I was always at the racetrack when he was at the sales.
Talk about that decision and that time in your career when you went to Dubai. You mentioned that a couple of times, and talk about that and what played into that decision on your part.
Well, it was a tough decision because my wife and I just had our daughter Erin, and she was born in 1992, so in February. So November 93, I went to Dubai, and she was born in 91. I'm sorry, she was 2.5 when I went, and then my wife was pregnant with our son Ryan. So I had to go by myself the first 6 months, and it was a lot to worry about and think about and wonder about as far as, you know, how they treated women, vaccinations, do we have to worry about, you know, A, B, or C. But we soon found out, and she loved it, and my kids loved it. It was a great experience, and they treated her great and my family great, and we loved Dubai, and we went there and lived there for 10 years. And they're great horsemen, the Maktoum family, and they're very loyal. When you're, you know, a good person and work hard, they're very loyal, and I'm very fortunate to still be with them 19 years later.
Kieran, in the late 90s, you were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and that's something that you have overcome and continued to achieve training at a high level despite that illness. Talk about the challenges you've faced since that diagnosis and even face, you know, on an ongoing basis every single day.
Well, it's a bitch of a disease, and I've been able to say that I have it, and I have it in my hip pocket largely because of my support group, my wife and kids. And I just lost my father in April this year, but my mother, brothers, and sisters were there's seven of us all together. So I have six brothers and sisters. And I'm very lucky to have Neil as my brother and assistant trainer for 19 years, and Art Magnuson. They're both, you know, been with me forever. So they saddle the horses. They're able to do the manual labor that I might not be able to do so much with MS now, but my mind is still great, and I can pick spots out for horses and go over the horses every day with them as far as, you know, what I want to do and what we are doing. And they think and act like me when I'm not there. So we have a great team. And luckily, I give myself a shot every day. I'm on Copaxone, and I have had 14 good years. And I haven't really had any major setbacks. I don't walk great. But other than that, you know, I don't get out of a walk very much anyway. So I don't, you know, I'm pretty good shape, and I'm doing fine.
Well, it's a tribute to you. You're the same guy, basically, that I met almost 30 years ago, I guess now, and you really haven't changed much. You haven't let the disease get you down. You're out there hustling around. I know you've had to adjust your schedule somewhat, you know, due to it, but it doesn't stop you at all. And I think that's a real tribute to you, that you're a fine example for other people.
Yeah, thank you. You have to be positive, and it makes it easier to be positive when I have such a great support group with me all the time and every day. And that goes for the owners to support me, and like the Maktoum family have been so supportive for all these years, and they deal with quality horses, and it helps all of us that are working so hard and getting up every day, because there's plenty of trainers that work as hard as we do, but they don't have the opportunity to work with such class and nice horses.
Obviously a very close-knit family, Kieran, and you mentioned your brother Neil, his wife Trish, who are at the barn every single day with you. How did Neil come about getting into horse racing here? Did he just follow you into it?
Well, that's a very good question. As a high school kid, he wanted to be in the horse business, and I kept telling him, no, go get educated, go to college. It's a hard job. It's very difficult, so I don't want you to be on the racetrack. So he walked horses for Wayne Lucas at Keeneland while he was in high school, and then he went to college, and he got an education from UK, and then he went to work for IBM. And when I was offered the job in Dubai in 1993, I asked him to help me write a letter about going over there and what I needed as far as financial obligations and what I was willing to do. And he kept saying, I want to go with you, I want to go with you. And I said, you know what, this might be an opportunity that you can go with me, because they're going to pay for people's rent, car, insurance, and it's a lot easier to come on the racetrack and live in a tack room is very hard, and making $300 a week. I didn't want him to do that. So he first came to Dubai when I went in 1993, and he's been with me ever since, and he's an outstanding horseman, and he does a fabulous job, and he loves what he does, and I'm lucky that he's not only my brother but assistant trainer.
Is he the only member of your family that's actively involved in racing?
Yeah, the other five lose some money on weekends betting on our horses. But he's the only one involved, yeah.
Yeah, I think they've cashed a few tickets, too. It's not all downside.
Yeah, no, they've had fun. And my brother Pete is His office is in Louisville. He's with Southern Wine and Spirits, so he's in the entertainment world, so he loves to come to the races, and he's involved somewhat there. But not too many of them have owned any horse or anything.
Talking with Kieran McLaughlin here on HRN's Trainer Talk on the Final Furlong Show. Kieran, let's talk about the horses that you've been associated with. You've had the privilege of being part of so many really nice horses and Eclipse Award winners. Tell us about a couple that really stand out to you when you look back.
Well, Invasor is definitely the big prize and the big horse over the years. There was nothing like him. I mean, we got beat the first time when we went back to Dubai. He finished fourth, and after that, he never lost for us. He was Horse of the Year, won the Breeders' Cup Classic at Churchill Downs, and it was so great to take him back to Dubai and win the Dubai World Cup for Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who is Shadwell Farm and been so supportive of me over the years. So that one is hard to replace those thoughts and that horse. And then, you know, after that, it would be La Hadood for the same connections, winning the Breeders' Cup at Monmouth Park on the turf. And Jazzle winning the Belmont for Shadwell. And then, you know, the horses now that we have, you know, it's been a great run with Alpha winning the Travers, very special, and we have quite a few horses for Godolphin and Darley. So again, the same, the Maktoum family, and we've been very fortunate with It's Tricky. She's been a special filly, and she just retired this week. She worked well on Thursday morning. Friday morning, we came out to look at her, and she was a little off right hind. Her hind ankle was filled up, so we x-rayed, and she had the start of a condylar fracture. But just the start of it, she doesn't need surgery or anything, and she will be retired, and she is retired, and she'll go home Friday to start a new career as a mother. But she was special to us, and we've had so many. Henny Hughes, second in the Breeders' Cup, and it's just been, we've been very fortunate to have some top world-class grade one horses.
You know, and this is a game that you always hear has the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you've experienced both of those, most recently with It's Tricky being a low, and of course Alpha winning the Travers Stakes certainly being a high. Talk about that and the roller coaster that trainers go through on a daily basis, really.
Yeah, it is. It is a roller coaster ride. And I mean, obviously Questing is a very special filly right now for us. She has been, you know, exceptional in winning the Alabama, the Coaching Club Oaks, and she's in the Ladies Classic. But it's, you know, you have so many horses. We keep up between 90 and 100 horses usually. So we talk about 10 of them, and the other, you know, 90% of them are everyday horses that you're hoping that, you know, do well, and the owners are happy with the results and hope that one day they're stake horses. But I try and keep with my MS, it makes you realize that, you know, there's winning a race and losing a race. It's not the end of the world, you know. So I try and keep it on, you know, just steady as we go. I don't get too high or too low, and I'm just fortunate to have some very nice horses.
Well, Kieran, I mentioned you're going to be busy over the course of the next 10 days or so, 9 days leading up to the Breeders' Cup. You have several entered into the World Championship races. Kind of fill us in on how everybody's doing coming up to the big dance.
Well, we have fortifying the two-year-old juvenile, and Shanghai Bobby has kicked our butt a couple of times recently. He's going to be tough to reverse that form. But I have a lot of respect for his connections. Obviously, Todd Fletcher's a good friend, and I respect his whole operation. He's beat us pretty easily the last two times. But the only thing that's interesting is a change of equipment for everybody other than Fortify is no Lasix for two-year-olds. We haven't run on Lasix in all three starts. So we broke our maiden, then we were second, and then we were third in the Champagne. So I don't know that that's going to reverse the form, but at least we don't have to worry about that, you know, he's running without Lasix for the first time, as everybody else has to be concerned. We're the only ones that have not been on Lasix. So it looks like it's a 10-horse field. We think two turns will help us. He's doing very well. He's a nice colt, and he should run well. then Questing in the Ladies Classic, very tough race with Royal Delta, My Miss Aurelia, Awesome Feathers, Love and Pride of Todd's. We're a three-year-old, so we get 4 pounds off or 3 pounds. And hopefully she runs a big race and things go well. Last time we got beat a nose at Parks on a funny racetrack, giving up 7 pounds. So she's a pretty special filly, but it's a tough, tough race. And then probably our best chance on the weekend is MC. He's flying. He just won the Forego, going 7/8 impressively. And he's really training very, very well. And it's just a decision now if we go 6 furlongs or the mile. And he's been sprinting all of his life, but I've always felt like he would get a mile. And the dirt mile, to me, is a lot easier than the sprint for many reasons. The sprint is 6 furlongs, 14 runners, and you can have a rough trip, and it's just a tough race. So going a mile with only 8 to 10 runners, you know, we would be forwardly placed and stay out of trouble, and we have a question mark if we can get 2 turns and the mile. But I feel like we can, and I've always felt like a mile would be no problem. So I'm going to correspond with Simon Crisford tomorrow about which way to go. Our first preference was a sprint, but after pre-entries, I'm going to, you know, lay it all out to him and think that we're 5-2 in the mile and probably 9-2 in the sprint. So we'll talk about which way to go. And then Alpha in the Classic, another tough, tough race with Game On Dude, amongst others. But I think he's the horse to beat for sure. And Alpha, he'll do well the mile and a quarter, but he's a three-year-old. He has to step up. It's a very tough race.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a horse that would have made me $500,000 if he would have won. And I'm sure there was only one guy that felt worse than I did was when Closing Argument got beat in the Kentucky Derby. Talk about that experience real quick.
Well, we were 73-1, and I thought we were a winner at the 8th pole. And he got to the lead, and Giacomo came and beat us right on the money, and we lost by 1/2 length or a neck. But it was a great experience, and then it was, oh, hell, that was a Kentucky Derby. We were just not just a race. And, you know, it was like we were happy because we were 73-1, and then they say, shit, that, you know, we almost could have won it, and we thought we did. We thought we were going to win it. I was with my son, Ryan, and I thought we were a winner at the 8th pole, but it was like I said, the highs and lows. There you go. You think you're going to win it, and then you look around and you got beat. He ran well, and at 73-1, he ran super. But we thought we were a winner, so it was kind of like a big letdown.
Well, I've been to a lot of derbies. I know you have too, but that one, I don't think I'll ever forget. I really thought he was home free, and I thought I was on my way to Barbados.
Yeah, right. I did too. I would have liked to have joined.
Kieran, just a minute or two left here before we have to wrap this up and let you go. We did this with Graham in the first half of the show. First time we've ever done this, so we're going to have a little fun with you here. Your favorite movie of all time?
Rounders.
Ooh, all right. Favorite food?
Sushi.
Wow. Favorite flavor of ice cream?
Vanilla.
Boy, you and Graham both. Your favorite band?
That's a good question. I'm not into music so much, but I would say the Rolling Stones.
All right. There you go. And favorite sports team? This is an easy one.
The favorite sports team is Godolphin. Oh.
That's a good one to have.
I'm part of the best sports, you know, a member of the best sports team, Godolphin. But I would say the New York Knicks, now that I've been in New York for a long time, but University of Kentucky basketball.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be UK for sure. Yeah. What's your prediction for this year? Another national title?
I doubt it. It's hard to do that back-to-back, but we have a great coach, and hopefully great prospects because everybody left.
Kieran, always a lot of fun, my friend. Thank you very much for taking the time. You're always so accommodating, and we can't thank you enough, and we're looking forward to seeing you out in California, and all the best with your Breeders' Cup contenders.
And thanks for doing a great job for horse racing. We need it.
Thanks, Kieran.
Okay, thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
All right. Kieran McLaughlin, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. Graham Motion was with us in the first half of the show. Again, a podcast will be available if you missed this, any portion of it, on our website, horseracingradio.net, tomorrow. Good stuff, huh, JT?
Yeah.
Too much fun.
Fantastic show. Really good.
And we're back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern time. Don't forget the final furlong, all about you, the listener, tomorrow. Call in, weigh in on your thoughts on Breeders' Cup or anything horse racing. That's 6 to 7, but we're back 3 to 7 with live racing coverage tomorrow as well. You can check it out, hrrnlive.com.
Good night, Barbados.
For our man Lee Delapina, our producer, doing a great job.
I thought you were done.
No, not yet. 8 seconds, we'll be done.
Okay.
All right, good stuff. Lee Delapina, Jude Fell, and I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you tomorrow on HRRN. Thanks for listening.
Good night again, Barbados.
Good night.